No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBSRADIOONE. This week, we have Maria back. She's on the road. She's corresponding with us through her cell phone. I think Charles Carralt used to do this, right? He did a segment called On the Road, where he's always out there. So Maria, who is a globetrotter of the top echelon, as far as I'm concerned, maybe we can do that with her. Get her perspective from around the world. How are you, Maria? Welcome back.
I have missed you, Michael, and thank you for having me back, and thanks to Kathleen for stepping in.
Yeah.
The big shoes that she left that I had to fill.
Well, I'm sure you could pick on me the same way she did. I'm sure you'll figure it out. Tell us about your trip. You had, like, the most amazing trip, right? You went to Switzerland.
I did. At this moment in my life, and I have traveled fairly extensively, I would say it's number one on my experience list and will probably remain in the top three in my lifetime. It was stunningly gorgeous.
Yeah, so that's what that was the best part of Switzerland. It's just that it's so beautiful. And
well, we stayed, my girlfriend and I rented a chateau on Lake Maggiore, which is as far south in Switzerland as you can get. Literally, Italy took us less than 10 minutes to get to that part of Italy. So there's a lot of influence in that regard. But the Swiss folks are amazingly friendly, and everything runs exactly and precisely and punctually as feasible. You can set your watch to their ferry schedule, to their bus schedule, to their train schedule. And I took a walking tour of Zurich when I arrived, and they said, if it doesn't work, it bothers us extensively, and we have to figure out why, because we expect perfection. So it was lovely to be in an environment like that, where it's, you know, very precise and orderly, and they're very friendly people, too, which I found wonderful. My dad is German, and he's actually first-generation American, so I understand that punctualness and everything, because my dad, he keeps charts and lists that are decades old, and, like, we have cuckoo clocks and grandfather's clocks, and they must chime at the exact same moment throughout the house, or else he's agitated by stress. So I grew up understanding that, and then to experience it again in another culture as an adult was actually pretty refreshing to me.
So do they speak English? I mean, no problem communicating in English, or do they mostly speak German and Italian? Or
they speak, where we were, mostly Swiss German, which is different than German from Germany, although I couldn't distinguish the difference. Mm-hmm. And they do speak some Italian. And then whenever I would ask, do you speak English, because I never want to assume anything, 100% the reply was a little. And I think that's the perfectionist in them, because they're taught English from the first grade, I think at least through the eighth grade. So, but because it might not be flawless, they always defaulted to a little bit. And then I had no problem communicating at all, but in Italy, sometimes I defaulted to Spanish because I'm fairly fluent in Spanish. And I don't understand Italian, but they understood me. And there's a lot of words that are similar. So between their English and my Spanish, no problems at all whatsoever. And then we went to, like, Milan and Lake Como and Liechtenstein and Austria. And we took a funicular up the Alps. And, I mean, sometimes our trips were 2 hours and 45 minutes to get to the destination. And then we took tours. And then we'd drive back. So it was a lot, but it was really, really rewarding and gratifying.
Wow, how cool is that? Yeah, one thing that I've always lamented, and I don't know why our education system is like this. I guess because we were so dominant in the world after World War II, but there are very few educated people in the world that are not bilingual. At the very least. The United States is really, really unusual in that capacity. And, you know, it's funny because I always lamented not speaking Italian. Both my grandmothers, both my grandparents on my mother's side were Italian, and they raised us. But, you know, my grandmother was from exactly the region that you're talking about. She was almost on the Swiss border, and she was blonde and blue-eyed, and she looked Swiss, and she didn't want people to know she was Italian. So when my grandfather, who spoke five or six languages but didn't speak English very well, would try to speak Italian to her, she would say, "I'm an American, speak English. I don't understand
you."
Yeah.
Wow.
And she wouldn't let us learn the language. And it's funny because my mother and her sisters all understood it pretty well, but they couldn't speak it very well. But, you know,
so you're the same as my folks. They said we speak English because we're American, and thus we didn't, because my dad spoke German, does speak German as his mother tongue, and my mother's Spanish as hers. But growing up in Southern California, we were exposed to that. Now, I have a brother, Carlos, and both of us are very fair and tall and blue-eyed, and we were always told, "You don't look Mexican," and we'd say that's because we're not, because my mom's family is Basque from northern Spain.
Yeah.
So, and then between that and the German, because my dad has pink skin and blue eyes.
Well, and that's the first thing you learn about Latinas and Latinos. Don't mix them up. You know, don't be lumping them all together, because they're very sensitive about it, especially Europeans, you know, Spanish and especially Spanish, European Spaniards. They're, you know, they don't want to be thrown in with South Americans and Latin Americans and Caribbean Spanish speaking people. So,
honestly, Michael, what was interesting about this trip, too, is I went to Europe in 2008, and our elections were very much top of mind of folks then, and yet again now. They want to know what we think, and boy, do they have their opinions, too, about our politics, which I found really interesting. And they had no compunction about sharing it, even if it was a little inflammatory. Like, they didn't know what side of the aisle I was on. And they would just start forth with, you know, what they think and how America can be great again and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, how do you know you're not offending me? But they didn't care. They were.
Yeah, I remember that about the British.
Really?
You know, well, the first time I went to England, and I was pretty young, and Richard Nixon was in the White House, and they all wanted to talk about Richard Nixon. And it was just about the time of Watergate, you know, so it was a big scandal. And they all wanted to talk about that. But they didn't want to talk about the Queen. You know, if you started to talk about the Queen and say, well, what's up with the Queen? What's this about? You know, you guys, we don't understand that in the United States. They immediately shut down. They were not interested in discussing their politics. But, man, they would they just love to talk about what was going on in the United States. So,
in my absence, Michael, as a superdelegate and a Clinton supporter, what are your thoughts about how it's unfolding so far? It seemed like it was pretty issueless because it was August.
Well, you know, one thing, I mean, that's what I'd like to discuss today. One thing that really amazes me is how well Trump's doing, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, he's really got a problem. He's really got a big problem. When you look at the electoral map because he's being beat up pretty well in some big electoral states, some big, you know, we call them the sacred 11. As amazing as this may seem, there are 11 states that you can win in the United States, and you can lose the other 39 and still get elected. So
is that also the same term as in battleground?
Well, battleground states, I think, are a little different. They're generally one of the sacred 11, but they also mean that they're in play. So right now, you have a couple of big battleground states where Clinton is up by 2 points. And even though that's one of the sacred ones, some of them are the sacred ones, they consider them battleground because they're in play. So I think battleground, that you're one of those 11 states is necessary to be a battleground state, but it's not sufficient. You also have to be, it also has to be a state that's in play. So California, for example, is one of the sacred 11, of course, but
right, and not
it's
a
not necessarily a battleground state, right?
No, because it's too blue.
Yeah, it's too blue, and you would say the same generally. Now this is changing, but states like Indiana, which are basically red states.
Now Missouri, I hear that Evan Bay, is that how you say his name?
Yeah,
is favored over the Rep. Todd Young there in Indiana. Is that your understanding?
Yes, and you know what? His father, Evan Bay Sr., who's a guy I worked for, was a long time member of the Senate and I think he was even a presidential candidate one time, but beloved in Indiana. I mean, couldn't do better in Indiana than have your last name be Bay if you're running for something.
And that's obviously a nostalgia factor for him, right? Because he had that seat, too, before.
Yes, he did. And so we'll see. And, you know, it's funny, next week, maybe, or the week after, we should have a show on down-ballot races and talk about how the down-ballot races are going, because that's very important to us, of course, in D.C., seeing as we're pushing for statehood. We can't bestow statehood upon ourselves. Only Congress can do that. So we're very interested. We would love to take control over both houses of Congress. And I think the conventional wisdom at this point is that the Senate is probably doable, but the House of Representatives is still a long shot because we have to take 30 seats. We'd have to take, you know, there'd have to be an exchange of 30 seats.
Oh, my. I didn't realize that. That sounds fairly daunting.
Well, it is a little daunting, but I worked for Jimmy Carter, and that was the strongest Democratic Congress that we had had. And, you know, remember guys like Tip O'Neill and Eugene, McGovern and George McGovern and people like that. They were running the Congress in those days, and we lost 35 seats with Carter. And the reason we lost 35 seats with Carter was that Democrats didn't come out to vote, you know?
Really?
They didn't like Carter. Everybody talks about the Reagan landslide. And the truth of the matter is that Reagan didn't win by that many votes, but he won in every state. He won 92% of the Electoral College. I don't think that's ever been done that I know of. Maybe back 100 years ago it was done, but I can't remember anybody winning 92% of the Electoral College. And he only won by, you know, he won by less than 10 million votes nationwide, but he won in every single state. We only won Georgia, which is where Carter was from, Washington, D.C., because we always vote for the Democrat, and Minnesota, which is where his running mate, Walter Mondale, was from. And Reagan won the other 48 states. So that could happen again, I think, if people don't show up. But I must say, from the looks of things over the last couple weeks while you've been away, It seems like more Republicans are coming over to the Trump camp, even though there are some notable ones who are not and who are still out there trashing him. The senator from Arizona this morning was on Meet the Press, and he refuses to Republican senator from Arizona refuses to endorse him. And
you're saying so, McCain?
No, not McCain. The other guy who, who's I'm looking up his name right now. It's killing me because I know these. I should know every one of these guys by name, but you know, this is what happens to you when you get older. Flake, Jeff
Just call
Flake.
A senior moment, Michael.
Yeah, Jeff Flake is the senator's name now. Now
okay.
I don't think McCain's endorsing him either, but you know, I think everybody understands that he and McCain went at it pretty early on. But Flake is also, he, you know, as you probably heard, even in Switzerland, while you were enjoying that wonderful chocolate and other decadent treats, he went to Mexico and met with the president of Mexico.
Right.
Yeah, and so,
which I heard that went badly for the president. I guess he's got a low approval rating to begin with, but the people were grumbling about it because he didn't defend them enough or something.
I don't know how it's playing in Mexico. Back here, I think that maybe, you know, I don't think Trump did himself any harm by going over there, but then he came back to Arizona. And he gave a speech in Arizona about immigration, you know. And they're saying that he softened his stand on immigration, but he actually stood behind a law in Arizona requiring people to identify themselves, which is considered one of the more draconian type laws of its type. And this Flake, the senator from Arizona, said he just couldn't come out and support a guy like this. So,
so funny, when you say that, I was thinking you were talking about somebody who is a flake.
Well, I guess that depends on who you talk to, you know, whether it's said that way or not. But he, you know, and you can understand that, right? This guy needs Latinos to vote for him. You can't get elected. Probably same thing in Southern California. It's an important vote all over the country. And that's one thing that we're seeing now is we're seeing Trump making moves towards minority voters.
Right.
And I just think he's crazy. I mean, I don't know why he doesn't have better advice, because he's saying for African Americans, for example, this is a perfect example for me. He's saying that the Democrats, who have had control in many cities that are predominantly black, haven't done anything for African Americans. And I think that's a legitimate thing for him to say. But then he goes on to say that he's going to keep African Americans safe by putting more police in the neighborhoods. Well, you don't need to look much at the Black Lives Matter movement to understand that this is not the problem that these people are having. Now, at least their perception of the problem is not that they need more cops. So, you know, to stand there and say, we're going to protect you by putting more police into your neighborhoods, I don't think that sells very well, and I don't know who's giving
them. Well, except for if you use Chicago as an example, that would make sense, that because those random acts of violence are out of control there. So perhaps more law enforcement on the streets would help that. I hear what you're saying, Michael, but I think what he's saying is that we have to restore or make more law and order. And because yesterday, I guess he was fairly well received at the church in Detroit with Ben Carson and whatever her name is, Omarosa.
Omarosa. I appeared with Omarosa in Cleveland. She appeared
I actually
me.
Interviewed her in the back in the days. Yeah, the Apprentice days. So they said that there were cheers. Now, again, it was an AP story that I read, so, of course, that was a person and their perception. But usually AP isn't if anything, they lean left, I would think, in their reporting. And I didn't detect any kind of criticism of the event and how it unfolded and what was said, et cetera. They talked about peals of, you know, applause and stuff that came throughout his talk. And then they put a prayer shawl over his shoulders at the end.
Well, you know, the thing is that my perspective, whether he's right or wrong about the police, is that, you know, it's just one of those things they teach in political 101, you know, politics 101. When you go give a speech before the B'nai B'rith, don't talk about how the Palestinians have been abused. Mm-hmm. And the Palestinians have been abused. You know, I mean, it's a legitimate
wrong
right?
audience.
but that's just the wrong audience for it. And that's right. What I see when he says to black people, you need more cops, is just a lack of understanding of what he's doing with people. Not that more police in neighborhoods wouldn't make maybe especially older black people feel safe. But it just seems to me to be you know, the wrong street for him to be going down if he wants to win over black voters.
Well, we had in my county, Michael, that I can say is kind of a little microcosm of what he's talking about. Oxnard is the biggest city in Ventura County. They've got over 200,000 residents. They've got three generations of gangs that have been around, like grandfathers, and then their sons, and then their grandsons. And the violence was out of control, and the district attorney did a whole gang injunction and had curfews and had actually attire. You couldn't wear certain NFL attire or else you would get cited, et cetera, et cetera. And it actually put everything back into law and order. Really extreme and unpopular because people were saying they're being denied their rights and their amendments and all that sort of thing, but it worked. And the people are happier now that they can walk in their streets without having to worry about gang crossfires and things like that Chicago's going through.
Well, and we went through it here in D.C. too. And the police chief, who's wildly popular, we have one of the most popular police chiefs in America. She's a woman named Kathy Lanier, and she's just resigned to become the head of all security for the NFL. Maybe we can get her on the show one day. But anyway, she's wildly popular. And we had the same situation. And she made people identify to get into a neighborhood called Trinidad in Washington a couple of years ago where we were just having an unreasonable amount of, you know, gang-related killings and drug-related killings. And so to get into Trinidad, into this part of the neighborhood, you had to show identification that showed you lived there, or you had to state that you had some purpose there. Well, that lasted about a week in Washington, D.C., because the ACLU was all over it, and the NAACP was all over it, and everybody was all over about, you know, you can't, you know, this is America, and you can't ask your you know, citizens to do that. But I will say, as liberal a jurisdiction as we are, and we don't get much more liberal than Washington, D.C., there were people that were in favor of it that said, yeah, you know, you got to do something. You're hemorrhaging. It's time to put on a tourniquet. It's not time to, you know, talk about what's necessarily right and wrong as much as it is a time to stop the killing. So she even had support. Didn't last. Her support wasn't enough. But yeah, I just think it's misguided on his part to take that path. But, you know, the thing that I find most unusual since you've been gone is today the Richmond Times-Dispatch, which has always endorsed a Republican since 1980, endorsed Gary Johnson.
Did they?
Yes. They said Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, neither one of them was qualified, had the basic character that it takes to be president of the United States, and they endorsed Gary Johnson, who, of course, is the Libertarian candidate, not even the Green Party candidate. you know, this is unheard of. And I think that one, maybe in the future we can do a show on this, but I think that one of the things that will come out of this election is that the third party movement in America will grow.
Mm-hmm. You know? I know there's lots of talk about that. It still seems to me it's so fringe that it's not realistic, but
it is so fringe that it's not realistic. But I think that you may see them triple or even quadruple the support they've got in the past, which still will not be enough to make, you know, to get any one of them elected. But it may, you know, it certainly may be the spoiler. And I think that, you know, people have got to worry about it, especially Democrats. You know that Ralph Nader had an editorial in the paper yesterday saying how we should stop calling Jill Stein a spoiler because that's what they called him, and he wasn't a spoiler. But we all know in the Democratic Party that if he had withdrawn prior to the election, Al Gore would have been elected and not George Bush. So he made the difference.
Didn't Rothschild do the same thing?
Yeah, but he didn't have the kind of impact. And I think the impact and the reason that now Ross Perot might have gotten as many votes, but the thing with him was that it was so close in some key states where Gore would have only needed that couple of points to win. And I think, you know, I think he makes a legitimate point. Look, Al Gore lost Tennessee. No Gore had ever lost Tennessee. His father had never lost an election in Tennessee. Even when he ran for president, he won Tennessee. No Gore had never lost an election in Tennessee. So it wasn't like the campaign didn't make some serious mistakes, one of which was they should have focused a little on Tennessee instead of assuming that they had it in the bag, right? And if he had won Tennessee. Yes. But no doubt that Ralph Nader had an impact.
Right.
And we're going to ask him to be on the show, by the way.
I don't know about your ballot, because they're saying that ours is the longest in the history of our state here in California, that they ran out of letters for the propositions, so they're having to double up on them. And in fact, our former Congress member called me this week because he wanted to weigh in with me about my opinion about Measure AA, it's called, which it's a half-cent sales tax proposed for our county, and he's putting his weight behind having it defeated. And I was like, AA? And he goes, yeah, we've run out of letters. Back to the outfit. Is your ballot going to be anything near that?
No, because we're not as crazy as the people in California. We're not as democratic either. You know, I mean, obviously, you people, you know, we believe in a Republican form of government where we elect people to make these decisions. But yeah,
early and often.
And the process in California is legendary, right? Prop right. this and prop that.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know,
even,
one of the
things, there's even one, I think I mentioned it to you early on, but I don't know if they had gathered enough signatures. We're voting on whether actors should put on condoms in pornography. That's one of the propositions.
Get
and
out
marijuana
of
here. And no, I'm serious.
You know, you've got bigger fish to fry. For example, actors, it really should say, actors should not be allowed to name their children. Children, you should have a proposition that actors have to, once they have a child, an actress has a child, it has to go before a board to be named so we don't end up with Moon Unit 1 and Moon Unit 2 and Apple and,
well,
you know,
how about
all the other crazy
Foreman?
Names. Again.
George Foreman 1 and 2 and 3 and
George,
4 and
right,
5.
4 and 5,
and
right.
Gwyneth Paltrow and Apple and Kanye and Kim Kardashian with their Northwest.
Yeah. Northwest. I love it. You know, it's like at least with George Foreman, I'll give him as a father that would make life a lot easier if I could just go, George, and, you know, when I was yelling, because sometimes I do that, right? You have children, you know how it is. Uh-huh. Sometimes I go, Trisha, Nick, Mary, whoever the hell you are, you know.
Yeah.
You go through the whole list of names. But yeah, I mean, that's crazy that you have to put on.
And of course, our assembly went wild before the closed session this week with all the things they ran through until I think the last bills got passed at 1:45 in the morning. They said that the Democrats just ran amok and did as much as they could because they've got such a super majority that basically anything they want, they get.
Well, you know,
here in
California. There ought to be some things that are left to the individual. And on that note, let me ask you what you think. Now, you may not have heard much about this being out of the country, but, you know, there's this controversy now where Colin Kaepernick refuses to stand. And the Santa Clara police today said they're going to boycott 49ers games. I don't know if I have this right, but evidently they volunteer to police 49ers games. I don't know if they get paid for that or not.
I can't speak to that. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
surprised.
You know, I've got a buddy in the NFL that does security, too. We should ask our various sources about that.
Yeah.
Because my thing with him is I understand he's got an opinion. It just seems disgraceful to do it the way. Now, I heard last week he got on his knees instead of standing.
Right. Well, you know, I've got to tell you, it's something that I deal with because I stand there and I put my hand over my heart and I say, with liberty and justice for all, and I think to myself, maybe as representing 675,000 people that don't have liberty and justice, that maybe I shouldn't say that. Now, I've never not done it because I'm proud to be American. An American. Mm-hmm. I come from a veterans family. I don't like what's happened to the people of the District of Columbia, but I respect the system, and I certainly respect our country. I'm not gonna, as lovely as Switzerland sounds, I'm not gonna renounce my citizenship and move over there. I guess I tolerate it, but I think about it. I think maybe we shouldn't be saying it because it's not true for the people.
Well, but it's still something to aspire to. It's still something to desire, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
it is.
The execution may not be, but at least those goals, I think, are deserving of us reiterating it.
Well, and you know what? It's the first fight that my wife and I ever had when we were dating. Watching TV, and I was watching them give speeches on the floor of the Senate about how they wanted to pass a constitutional amendment banning the burning of the flag. And I said, I'll never forget this, I said, oh, how stupid is this? That's what makes America great, is that if you want to burn the flag, you can burn the flag. I mean, that's really what we all fought for, right? And what mm-hmm. Americans fought for. And she just flipped out. She's like, you want to burn the flag? What's wrong with you? You want to go live in a communist country? You want to? Maybe you should wrap yourself in the flag before you set it on fire, huh? Maybe. I mean, she would. And I was surprised that she was so adamant about it. But she's, you know, she's like, look, this is our flag. You don't have a right to burn it just because you're dissatisfied, you know.
How did you gracefully extricate yourself from that?
I think I agreed with her because I was afraid.
Of course you did.
I was afraid. It was shortly after she announced to me that when she moved out on her own, her father had bought her a gun and sent her to school to learn how to use it. And I thought... an upset woman with a gun that actually knows how to use it. Maybe I ought to just, you know, the politician in me came out and said, well, you've got a real point there. Let's change the subject. But she worked for a defense contractor. She's very loyal American. Many of her dad's a veteran. Many of her close friends were veterans. And that was her opinion, is they had fought and they had died for that flag, and that you didn't have a right to disrespect it, no matter what your opinion was. And it's funny because that's the way this seems to be turning, this argument. A veterans group came out today in support of Kupernak, a white veteran is their spokesman, and he says he feels that Kupernak has a point, that blacks are treated unfairly in America, and that he has every right to do that, and they're standing behind him because as veterans, that's what they went to Iraq and Afghanistan and fought for. They fought for your right to give your opinion. So,
wow.
I think we'll see, how this unfolds over time. But what are
your thoughts on it, Michael?
I think he has the right to do it. I do. I think he has the right to do it. I think that as a matter of protest, he has the right to do it. And I think as a football fan, if you don't like it, you have the right to express that opinion as well. You know, if you don't want to go to a San Francisco 49ers game because you think he's being disrespectful, I think that's your right. And I think that and like I say, I struggle with it. So obviously I think about it, but I haven't done it. I haven't done it. And one of the reasons that I haven't done it is because, first of all, I don't want to get rid of the Pledge of Allegiance or the American flag. But the last part of it does bother me. And I use it all the time. I say it in speeches. I say that when I was a little boy, they made me stand up every day and put my hand over my heart and say, liberty and justice for all. And I believed it. And I think that's the way it should be, liberty and justice
and
for all. So,
what about, I noticed you didn't bring in the one nation under God part.
Well, the one nation under God, you know, I'm a big believer in God. You know, I'm a big believer in God, so I don't ever want to cut him out. And I think we go a little too far with political correctness sometimes. I think that, my opinion, I guess, is that if you want to have a Kwanzaa bush and a menorah and a Christmas tree in front of the school, that's okay with me. You know, as long as you're not excluding anybody. I don't think that, one thing that really strikes home for me is, and we have a lot of it out here, you probably don't have much of it out there, but this thing about Confederate soldiers. There's a big controversy about, they wanted to take a statue of Robert E. Lee out of the Capitol. And, you know, I don't think you need to rewrite history. In fact, I think it's dangerous to do that. You know, we should, I don't think because you're praising this man for being a great general and being, and representing one opinion during what was the bloodiest war in American history, I don't think that means you're endorsing slavery. I really don't. And so I think sometimes we go a little too far with it. But I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't take God out. And I wouldn't take "In God We Trust" off the
currency.
Yeah, because you know what? When we're the supreme beings in the universe, then that only causes us more problems. You know, don't we need a little humility in our lives? And don't we need to subjugate ourselves to some principle? And if not to God. Plus, which I gotta just perfectly be honest with you and tell you that when I look at somebody like Halle Berry, there's no way in the world you convince me that two amoebas randomly bumped into each other and that, you know, 2 million years later, that's what you get. I think that there is a divine purpose. I think, I've certainly seen God work in my life, but I respect. You know, if you want to be one of those people that doesn't believe in God or is an atheist or has a different conception of God, I respect that.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because you and I both share Catholicism. And with my four children, not only did they receive all of their sacraments, I paid for them to go through Catholic school. And then my boys went to a Christian high school. And I live in a top 100 school district and blue ribbon school district that people move there because the property taxes fund these amazingly public schools. But I just wanted them to have that also in their upbringing and in their education. And all four of them do not ascribe to being Catholics now in their 20s. And so it's, in fact, my sons call themselves apathetic agnostics. They don't have an axe to grind, they say.
Well, first of all, I've left the Catholic Church too, but when I was a young man, you sent your kid to Catholic schools because those nuns, you know, they were no nonsense, right? That's where they, when I was a kid growing up, you went to Catholic high school because you were a bad boy. And they said those brothers, you know, unlike the public school teachers that'll take it, the brothers will just slap them aside the head and, you know, push you into your locker. And there was some truth to that. I always ascribe to the position that the nuns that interacted with children checked "I hate children" on the employment form, because they seem to get the ones, the toughest ones. And then if it wasn't bad enough that they would get some young woman like that, they would then truss her up in like 100 pounds of wool clothes. You know, remember all the little faces. And you know,
well, I was taught by nuns, in grade school that's all you saw was their face. But then the order that I was taught by was the Immaculate Heart nuns, and they had a revolution. So this is keep in mind, Southern California, Los Angeles specifically. And suddenly one day they came to school and they had on street clothes, lay people clothes and makeup. And it was this huge thing that was going on. I didn't know enough then, just like with Cesar Chavez and stuff. I just remember a priest giving a homily and people standing up and walking out of the church, just livid and furious. And I was so little, I didn't understand what was going on. I just knew that big people were not happy. And so when the nuns, the same thing with the nuns with me, they were not taskmasters. Mine were loving and kind and encouraging and flamingly liberal. So I didn't have to deal with the knuckles being cracked with the ruler.
Well, this is the perfect segue, right? Because on the good news spectrum this week, Mother Teresa has been named by the Pope as a saint. And
that missed me.
Huh?
That missed me.
Oh, yeah.
Or she got canonized this week.
Yes, she got canonized.
Yes, I had heard that it was scheduled. Okay, I didn't know it actually happened.
And I'm not quite sure if that's the same as being beatified. I don't know if she still, you know, has to go through some things before she's officially made a saint. Because I know one of the things you have to do to be beatified is you have to prove that you performed a miracle in your life.
I thought it was two.
Maybe two.
But in any event, I think you only get canonized once you've been vetted.
Oh, well, maybe. Yeah,
so
but
she's already done her due diligence then.
Well, either way, you know, there was a big celebration in Rome today. And we have a particular soft spot for her in Washington, D.C., because one of her many missions was here in Washington, where she started an order of nuns that takes care of crack babies, babies that are born addicted to crack. And they've just done it doesn't make the news much anymore, but, you know, during the 1980s, Washington, D.C. just had a crack epidemic. We were right up there with Los Angeles as, you know, top crack city. And we had lots of babies that were born with AIDS and born with addicted to crack. And this order that Mother Teresa started here in Washington takes care of these poor infants. So we love her here in Washington. And, you know, it just goes to show you she was only 5 feet tall. But, you know, how much good one person who's dedicated in a lifetime can actually do. So.
And are you familiar, Michael, that she struggled with her faith throughout her career, too?
No, but you know what?
Her confessor came forward after she to talk about how she wanted to know, was there really a God and was she doing God's work? And I mean, like a real human being. I don't know if it's like medicine that you can speak about your patient once they've expired, but he revealed a lot that she suffered too. You know, she doubted sometimes too. And
well, how could you be around all that poverty and
yes.
all that misery and not have doubts? I mean, don't we all have doubts? Don't we say, you know, you hear these terrible stories about, you know, babies who've done nothing, who die.
Exactly.
And, you know, right. terrible things happen to them. And you go, how can this, you know? And I think at some point you either give it up and say, this is beyond our understanding. We just don't have the capacity to understand the way God thinks, or maybe you become an atheist. I don't know.
Well, when I was in India, I was giving the polio vaccine with Rotary for their Eradicate Polio Now, mm-hmm. and I had an opportunity to go on to Calcutta. And I had been in India, I think it was about 2 weeks, and I had seen, they sent me to the slums, the Muslim slums, which was ground zero for polio in India. And I saw so much, I just like, I don't have the capacity to see anymore. I need to go home.
Yeah.
to get back
no, I've heard
America.
Other people say that if you go, it'll change your life. I've certainly heard people. And just, you know, just the fact that you were there trying to eradicate polio, which is a disease that my mother had it, and they eradicated it when I was a child. I mean, I was the first in line to get the polio vaccine with my brother and sister because my mother had suffered from it as a child. We had eradicated it.
Had it down to two countries, but that was in the news today, too, that because of Boko Haram, there are two cases now that have come alive because they weren't allowing Western medicine. So the Red Cross and the Rotary jumped in. I guess they immunized 1.5 million children in a blitz campaign because it's reared its ugly head after 2 years of, you have to be 3 years polio free in order to have it considered eradicated. And they were 2 years. So now they're back to ground zero, which is unfortunate, but it was down to Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nigeria and India. And then India got off the list. So then it was down to those three, and then down to two, and now the third one is back in.
Well, and you know, you think sometimes about how simple the solutions are, and you wonder why we still have these problems. Like I remember a few years ago, the people that were trying to eliminate malaria by buying mosquito nets. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but there was a worldwide campaign to collect money to buy these mosquito nets. And the mosquito nets were some ridiculous price, like $2 a piece or something. And they collected millions of dollars to do that. But, you know, you wonder sometimes if that's all it takes is a $2 mosquito net, what the hell are we doing that we can't get that done?
I know with polio in India, the Muslims, imams were telling them not to let their children get immunized because it was a Western culture to sterilize their children.
Right.
So Rotary had to get with them and negotiate and inform them that, no, we weren't toying with your child's fertility, that we were actually trying to help them have a better life. And that's why India is polio-free, because that message got out. Those homes. Michael, there was a mother with four children, and she wasn't going to let us give it to her children. And she said to me through an interpreter, I've already done it. But what we did in India is we would paint their pinky finger purple with purple nail polish. So we knew whether or not we had been to that household. So I asked the woman to show me her children's hands. One of them was purple. The other three weren't. And so she finally relented.
Well, and that really is the major obstacle to all this stuff, right, is ignorance. And the Indians, especially in India, you know, that when the British, during the bloodless revolution, Gandhi's bloodless revolution, in which millions of people died, one of the things was that the British armed the Sikhs and others with rifles from the Second World War, which had been packed in Vaseline to keep them from rusting, and they simply spread the rumor that they were packed in animal fat, and therefore sacrilegious, and
there you go.
And they wouldn't touch them. They wouldn't touch the rifles. Ignorance is a terrible thing, and especially when it's supported by religious leaders.
That they call them crawlers, the folks that are afflicted by polio, because they have to walk on all fours.
Yeah.
And I saw them firsthand. It's not like we're selling a fantasy here. It's a reality. But,
right.
You know, to India's credit, they mobilized, and, yeah, they haven't had a case. I think it's been 5 years now, so they're well on their way.
Right. Well, you know, that's one thing, I guess, if you're talking about the pros and cons of communism, for example, you know, that after the Second World War, a venereal disease was rampant in China, and they wiped it out almost instantly. There hasn't been a case of venereal disease in I don't know how long in China, because they went out and they vaccinated everybody. And they said, you either get a vaccine or we shoot you. And they go, okay, let me get the vaccine. Yeah, so, that's a terrible thing. Well, we're running out of time here, Maria, and we didn't get to talk about Donald Trump's illegal campaign contribution to the Attorney General of Florida, or the fact that Hillary Clinton hasn't had a press conference in 273 days. I think I've had a press conference in less than 273 days, and nobody really gives a damn what I have to say. Or that David
French. You know what's amazing to me, though, that she's doing that, is that the number keeps ratcheting up, and the pressure. Like, just throw a damn thing and cherry pick who's going to be there and have it be not an issue anymore.
Right. Again, you know, right up there with don't tell black people you're going to put more police in the neighborhood, have the damn press conference. Yeah, I mean, you know, what is that? They're playing it so close to the vest. And I, you know what? I think it's offensive to run a campaign where the main strategy is, hey, the other guy's a schmuck, and if I just keep my mouth shut, I won't have to do any. You know, I won't have to say anything. I'll just let him get hoisted on his own petard, as Shakespeare would say. I think.
Well, hey, baby,
if you're gonna be
talk about schmuck. What about Anthony Weiner?
Anthony Weiner, what is with that guy? Oh my God! And his poor wife. You know, his wife stood with him as long as she could. I mean, she can't stand with them anymore, right? She would just look like an idiot. What is that guy? And you know that I was interviewed, maybe we can have her on. I was interviewed by Olivia Nuzzi, who was the woman that turned him in originally. She was the intern that turned him in and got fired. And she got a job working for, I think she works for BuzzFeed now, but she ended up being a reporter. But she did an interview, one of the better interviews that I've ever had. And, and I asked her, I said, what is that? And she goes, I don't know.
Well, he's obviously sick.
Yeah.
But for him to involve his son in the latest go around, I'm sure that's where she had to say that. I can't, no, this is no,
yeah.
This is between, yeah, no.
Yeah.
So and what I found interesting is all the stories say, finally, she left her husband. Finally.
And you know what? I believe, and I've said this before, Republicans and Democrats have different agendas and they have different ideas, but neither one of them has a lock on the high road.
No,
all have to remember, that we could spend all day, I'll give you a McCarthy and you can give me a wiener, we could go on all day about it. And
that's true.
That's what and I'm going to close out on this, but that's why we need God in our lives, because we have to realize how fallible we are. And I think we have a responsibility to look to, the old saying that, a man's grasp has to, reach has to exceed his grasp, or what's to heaven for? And I agree with that. I think we always have to look to a higher standard.
Or power. Whatever that looks like.
Well, you know it's a woman, Maria.
Right, thank you.
I've learned that much in life. And on that note, I will say goodbye to our traveling correspondent, and we'll see you next week. And we're going to play out with a song by Marvin Gaye, and who's a Washingtonian, and he's asking the same question I think Maria and I are asking. What's going on?
Yeah.
Thanks, America.
Thank you, Michael. Have a great week.
You too.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother,
I can dig it.
Stop right on. What's
up,
man?
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.